Hey there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, we hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Wandering DMs live stream. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. And today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about how do you learn to play D&D? Which is a bigger topic than I anticipated to begin with.
Yeah, just minutes before Dan and I were preparing for this, and he said, I'm worried it's too shallow a topic. And I think I hit him with like three zingers, and now his head is reeling. Excellent.
Started this, my idea was that the topic was going to be learning from the book.
Yep.
Traditionally, which I find to be uncommon. So as I was saying to you, Paul, a couple minutes ago, anytime I see a discussion online about how did you learn to play D&D for classic players, it's 99.9999% of the respondents will say you must learn in person from a mentor. It's impossible to learn from a book.
Interesting. Now, wait, let me clarify here. These are, I presume, largely old school forums, yes?
Yeah, it's first edition. Yeah, it's original D&D,
Yeah, I definitely think that the older stuff that's... I can understand where they're coming from. So you and I both learn from books, which is unusual.
Yep.
Let me hit you with my little anecdote. Here's my anecdote of how I learned how to play D&D. My father bought my mother the Moldvay basic set.
Oh.
Because it had dragons and wizards on the front, and he knew she liked that sort of thing. He was like, I think it was just, you know, in the whatever, it was in the moment, right? It's the early 80s, and so it was, you know, popular, and so he recognized it in a store and went, oh, here's a nice little gift I'll buy. And she was like, great, thanks. And she put it on a shelf in her closet and forgot all about it. And then a year or two later, my brother and I, getting up to no good and digging around in her closet, found it. And we were like, what's this thing? This is amazing. And so my brother started reading it, and he tried to run it for me. He was sort of my first DM. We were much too young, had no idea what we were doing. He is 3 years older than me, so he maybe got it a little bit more and maybe even was clever enough to realize this is too much for Paul. So, like, he kind of folded it into this own weird, just sort of, like, quasi-role-playing slash let's pretend kind of game.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was my introduction to D&D, and then he quickly became bored of it and was like, forget it, I don't want to ever do this again. And it hasn't played since. Wow. meanwhile, I got hooked, and so one of my earliest D&D memories is reading that Moldvay box set and being worried that I was going to get in trouble because it clearly says on the side for ages 10 and up.
I have a similar anecdote. So for me, I asked for it, mm-hmm. right? So I had a great uncle who was his house was full of poker and games and all kinds of stuff like that. And he got a publication called Games Magazine, and he'd read it, do all the crosswords, and then hand it off to me.
Okay.
And in the late 70s, they started to promote Dungeons & Dragons as this revolutionary new game hobby. It's in our best of year voting. It's in our Hall of Fame voting. And I was like, well, that sounds interesting. So I asked for it. No one had ever talked to me about it. So I asked for it one Christmas, and I got the Holmes Basic D&D. And opened the box and was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
No dice. It had the chit. I had had chits. So for several months, I was drawing chits to randomize stuff out of a cup. and as a result, from day one, I was DM.
Yeah.
So in order to make a game, I had to be DM from just the get-go. And that's always been my experience with D&D. So my friend also was given the Holmes Basic. And just like you're saying, it said either 10 and up or 12 and up.
Yep.
And his mother actually disallowed him from using it. So they were strict enough that she
forced him. The box said no. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And we were like 8 or 9 or something like that. So it was stuffed in the closet and was like, you can't use this until you turn that age. And I went over to his house and was like, screw that. now we're playing. So I'm breaking. So weirdly, as literalist as I am, and as much as I only had the book, that was the one rule that I broke, was like, I don't care that. Now we're playing.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely remember as a kid. So I certainly had, like, as I got interested in it, right, my brother, like, quickly left it behind. I became interested. I read the books and I was like, I had to run it because no one else I knew would run it. Right. So I would run it. And I think all through middle school, I probably had haphazard, like maybe sometimes I could get some friends together to try and play a game, but I certainly had nothing like a campaign. Not until high school. I think I played weird little one-off games, but I was so hungry for it. I was looking for any excuse to try it out. You know, my family knew I was into this now. They were like, oh, Paul really likes this stuff. So I certainly got, like, weird presents that were, like... I remember getting the Powers and Perils box set from an aunt who had no idea what the hell it was she was giving me, and I had no idea what the hell it was. When I'm reading, I'm like, this isn't D&D. What is this thing? I don't understand.
Right, right. And I got that. I got some of that stuff, too, and I got miniatures that were totally inappropriately sized and stuff like that. Yep.
I remember also the local toy store started carrying the Orange Spine first edition AD&D books around the time when I was old enough to, like, save up my allowance and ride my bike down there and buy them. So I bought the first edition Player's Handbook. I think I bought the Monster Manual first and then the Player's Handbook. And I had no concept that this was actually a different game than the one I was playing. So for a long time I was playing BX box set plus first edition AD&D Player's Handbook, no DMG, and shoved these together into something that was what I thought of as D&D.
Yeah, I think that's very common. And you know what? I actually, even today on social media, I saw someone saying, like, comparing attack charts in Moldvay to AD&D, and someone was like, those charts are different? I never noticed that. Right.
Well, because, of course, they don't even exist in the Player's Handbook. The Player's Handbook... is really the first edition AD&D Player's Handbook. I find to be fascinating by what it omits. There is no rules in there about how to hit a monster. They're just not there.
That's a good point. And the weird thing is that is in the players section in the earlier original D&D. Mm-hmm. So that AD&D was like a one-off attempt at restricting that didn't stick.
That's really odd, right?
Yeah, totally.
I always wonder, does this mean the DM is supposed to be doing all the roles, but.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know.
When I went back to original D&D, I was really freaked out that it was in the player section to begin with. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people were, like, in the 80s were playing, you know, a mixture of BX Basic and AD&D, and it worked well for many people.
You know, and I have to say, huge thanks to my incredibly patient parents who dealt with me. I remember when I was 15, I was... again, like, didn't have a regular group, was desperate for any kind of roleplay I could get, had some random Dragon magazines that kept telling me how amazing Gen Con was, and so I said, like, for Christmas, I want nothing but a trip to Gen Con, that's what I want, please, please, please. And my dad, bless him, bought us tickets, flew us out there, would drop me off at the Mecca, and then, like, go to a ball game. Because he had no idea what the hell was going on in that convention. And he's like, whatever, have fun, see you later, day after day.
I will, how gently can I express this anecdote? On my end, at one point, my family historically is big in sports. And I asked to go to a D&D summer camp at one point, and that was possibly the second angriest that my father ever got. That didn't work well at all. We're very good now. Understand the direction I went in, but that went over like a lead balloon.
That's funny. Yeah, I think my father, that was the one and only year he did that. And then thereafter, he found other ways to send me to the point of, like, he actually endorsed me taking my older brother's ID so I could get a hotel room and go by myself. He's like, just go. He's like, I understand now. You're not doing drugs or, like, you know, buying prostitutes. You're You are literally going to get sitting around and being nerdy for hours on end and then passing out in the hotel room afterwards. Whatever.
You know, I feel like that's what parenting... I mean, I think that that's pretty much top-notch parenting from a distance. It's like they checked it out, verified it. Yep, okay, now you're on your own. I don't just spend a lot of time on that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great. That's super.
Yeah. So for me, it was a lot of self-teaching. You know, a lot of just, you know, pestering my parents and getting them to buy me whatever I could or take me to things. I think originally my mom was working in Colombia in the late 80s, and so took me to their game convention. They had a game convention in the late 80s, and so took me to that. And again, like, just very patiently walked me around as I dug into it, and she had no idea what the heck was going on.
That's great. Before we move on to the next topic, let me just ask, how much time was it between your brother introducing you and you DMing for the first time?
That's an excellent question. Ooh, that's really good. Yeah. Let's see. Eldish, let's pretend to, like, actually rolling dice to, like, now we're really playing the game.
I think
probably, I would say maybe 7th grade was probably the first time I really remember running a game. How old are you in 7th grade? Do the math.
Like 13-ish.
14, 13... I want to say I was 12. Okay. Definitely, I remember being in summer camp at age 12 and playing a lot of D&D. Yep. Okay, so let's say 12. So probably about 3 years.
Okay, interesting. So, for what it's worth, for me, I was you know, DM as soon as I opened the box. Like within the week, I was DMing. And I bet it was probably like, because I was trying to think about this, I bet it might have been 5 or 6 years before I was ever a player.
And how old were you at that time?
Yeah, so I think I got it when I was 9. So I think I got it in the 4th grade. So I started playing DMing when I was 9. I think we had like a lunchtime campaign in the 6th grade, I think, was when we started. And I think I might have been in high school before a friend DM'd me as player.
Are you have you been watching the latest season of Stranger Things, Dan?
I don't have Netflix, so we're eagerly anticipating it. Love the first season. I've not seen it. I guess it's in a mall.
Yeah, there's a recurring character effect that Will has of constantly being like, "Can we play D&D now?"
There's a lot of
memes about that. There's a moment where they try to play D&D and his friends are just, they're distracted, they're not into it, and he gets super frustrated. And I actually found that really painful to watch because it struck home so hard for me. I remember in middle school at that age, desperately trying to pull enough people together to play a game and them not taking it seriously or not really paying attention or whatever. And just being like, fine, forget it. Screw you guys.
I get that. And, you know, not having, so, you know, I had these recess games and did not have. Mm. You know, at home 4 hours, didn't have a place, didn't have transportation where that was possible. And so my partner's father has this thesis that what a guy gets into when they're 13, they're stuck with forever. And so, yeah, so sometimes I feel like that yearning for more at age 13, it got hard-coded and might not go away no matter what happens.
That's hilarious. All right, before we dive way too deep into nostalgia, which we've already clearly done, so we learned from books. We've both been DMing basically forever. I'm curious, since my experience was this sort of weird, like, transition gray area from just playing Let's Pretend to playing D&D, like, when you were just reading it out of the book, did you get how a game was supposed to work right off the bat?
I always felt like it. I never ever had a, like, I don't understand this feeling. You know, I was always a literature person, I guess. So, you know, even before that, even when I was in kindergarten, apparently I was really a written text ideologue. Apparently I was already wandering around saying, everything that's in the world is in writing if you can just, like, read it. So I felt comfortable with that. You know, like you were saying, there's a sample of play in Holmes Basic and all those things. So
all the basics that's usually included that, right? Some kind of like almost like sort of script like writing of what the DM says and what the players say back and forth. And that's probably the best they got in sort of exemplifying how the game is supposed to work.
Yeah.
But I could totally see, like, if you didn't start with Holmes, like, if you started with the LBBs, if you started with White Box, I could see how you just would be like, someone's got to show you how to play, because you're not going to get it.
Now, that makes sense, actually, because it's so disintegrated all over the place, and you need chain mail, and the damage is in a different place, and the, like, most people say the editorial side was really bad on those things. So that's a good point.
And, you know, there's the famous anecdote of how Tunnels and Trolls got started.
Yeah.
You've heard that one. Ken St. Andre, the author of Tunnels and Trolls, got the White Box of D&D, loved the concept of role-playing, but couldn't make heads or tails of the books, and so invented his own game.
Right. And I heard that was... I think the version in the John Peterson book is also that he didn't have the polyhedral dice, and so he wanted a version that was all D6s, nothing else.
I got to assume that he at least heard from friends who had played it, or played it himself, or something, so that, like, I can't see how you could read the White Box and, like, not really understand or be able to run the game, but get the core concept.
I agree.
Because it's like the core concept is the piece that's missing, right? The core, like, what happens when we sit down? That's the bit that's kind of not there. The mechanics are there, but
I mean, they have a script. I mean, there's a sample of play, even the LBBs. And I think that a lot of the stuff is what's dependent on chainmail.
Right,
I think is the missing.
But there's a leap there, right? From miniature wargaming to role playing, there's definitely a leap, and you need, I think, someone to show you.
I would say it's more of the editorial issues with the White Box. It's so disintegrated all over the place, and it's very curt.
Yep.
And I would agree that someone was saying that they assume that you do have a lot of sense of history, pulp fiction, mythological monsters. None of that stuff is actually described. You just get stats for it. Hmm. So you do have to fill in. You do have to fill in the mythological pulp background of all that. I agree with that part.
I kind of want to go back now and reread like the intros. Does it hit the nail on the head and just say things like, you are going to pretend to be a character in a story or in an adventure where the DM arbitrates what happens.
Yeah.
And you're going to pretend to be a hero.
It does the usual thing of, do you want to play Conan or Tolkien, right?
Right. Okay, great.
That was always his go-to in the... these rules are fantasy. If you don't care for Burroughs with John Carter or the Conan saga or... Fafford and the Grey Mouser, then you will not find Dungeons and Dragons to your taste.
Right, but that's more about setting. I guess what I'm talking about is like the notion that you are going to take on a role, that you are going to pretend to be a different person.
Okay.
Is that in there?
Okay. I'd have to look. More closely.
Yeah, I know. I remember one of the interesting anecdotes about the White Box is that the term role-playing doesn't appear because it hadn't been invented yet.
I agree.
Or at least applied to this activity.
Perfectly well put.
Yeah.
Cool.
Right. So how did learning from the book affect us? Certainly for me, like I didn't really understand that there were different editions of the game or that meant anything. But I think I got the basic concept. I was able to run it just fine.
Yeah.
And what about you?
I agree. You know, it's an interesting question about did I get it on the first time, because I was going through the Holmes book before this morning, trying to find things that I made mistakes about or was confused about, and I was actually surprised by how little I could come up with, actually.
You know, the funny thing is, I feel like only now when I go back with my, like, academic historical eye do I start to go like, oh, this is confusing. Like, in the BX Basic book, it's not clear... how in the turn order, whether like each person goes or like do we all do our range combat, then we all do our magic, then we all do our whatever.
But I agree with that, and I think there was a lot of stuff that we like at the you could read and bring, I don't know, your personal instinct to it, not even know that you were patching over a gap like that. And that was actually the point of me thinking of this topic being interesting, in fact. is was how much was there that we were patching over we didn't even realize that was different from other people.
For me,
so
I
that
think,
might have been.
For me, I think anything I patched over was patched over not because I just made a leap of faith or I interpreted it a different way, but usually because I saw others do it this way, right? Either from a random game at a random convention I went to, or other friends who played with other people who were playing with me just said, oh, this is how you do it. And I went, okay, sure.
Well, that's the thing, because I didn't have that for probably 20 years.
That's interesting.
Right? I don't think I saw anybody DM that hadn't learned from me for possibly a number of decades, actually. So
fascinating.
It's true that my first 20-year network was all just what came out of me to begin with.
I think that can no longer exist. I think the internet has made that kind of experience impossible.
Yeah. That's a fact.
You know, speaking of
so
which,
me,
yeah, go ahead.
Maybe we'll transition to that possibly, actually. So I hadn't thought of that as part of this topic, but so how do people, if that's not possible, how do people learn nowadays?
Yeah. I mean, I think streaming is a big part of it. You know, I think that's a lot of the draw of watching actual play is, oh, I've heard of Dungeons and Dragons because I watch Stranger Things. Oh, you can watch some of it online. Okay. I'll watch some of it online and see what that's like. In fact, I even just recently had a conversation with someone who I was very surprised to learn was a Critical Role fan first, and then thought to themselves, oh, I should play this game. It looks fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
Yep. And I think that's the value of streaming. I think that's, you know, whether it's just introducing you to the concept so you know what the heck it is you're getting into, or if, as a practice DM, it's showing you how other DMs do it so you can see other people's technique and learn from that. I think that's the real value of streaming. That's what's so exciting about it. It's increasing that sort of viral exposure of the game and how it works and how you can alter it to be better for you by watching others do it.
That is really invaluable, and what a difference that makes. I mean, just, it's funny because I wasn't thinking about it in terms of this chat, but just yesterday I was thinking, boy, if they had recorded Gygax's early sessions at the table, that would have saved 100 years of argumentation about what happened or what was expected or stuff like that. What was the meaning of this rule or something?
There is famously like an audio cassette somewhere, isn't there? I feel like. And they tried to do something where they tried to, like, theatricize it into sort of a... Yeah, oh, I'm going to have to dig that one up. I remember posting
now,
it to my blog.
I know there's a talk show. Like, he was on the... whoever was doing a late-night talk show around 1980. And there's, like, about 5 minutes where he says... Where the host says, what's role-playing? And he says, role-playing's right now. You're in a passageway, and there's 4 ways. Which way do you go? And the host... Like kind of oddly gets more into it than Gygax wanted to. He's like, what happens next? What's behind that door? And Gary wants to go on to other stuff. He's like, well, whatever you want, really.
Right. Well, that's brilliant. That's amazing that he can, like, draw in the talk show host like that.
He totally does. It's like, really awkward how the host is now more into it than Gary is.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I definitely want to see that.
I bet that's on YouTube somewhere.
The thing I'm thinking of is somewhere there's an audio cassette where they recorded a session of people playing the game, and then they tried to, like, go back and edit it and get, like, voice actors to play the characters to, you know, fictionalize the game. But it's like intercut with, like, people just playing the game and voice actors.
Well, I feel like, I mean, that was still my instinct up until like 2 months ago, actually, is like, if you look at a show called Harmon Quest, you know what that is, right?
Yep.
I mean, they're intercutting it with animations, right? Up until 2 months ago, I was like, you can't just sit and just watch role-playing game in real time. You've got to dramatize it or something.
I totally agree with that. That was originally my take on actual play as well. I thought, like, well, at least Harmon Quest, they edit it. They animate over it, so you have animated characters, like, sort of also adding visual appeal. They're just making it much more an entertainment. And I think that is fun, and I like that a lot. And if you're just trying to make an entertaining show, sure. But I do think that there's a different beast that is, like, just watching other people play the game.
I think you're right. I think it was like maybe about 3 months ago. I thought, I mean, again, as I attempt to evolve to modern practices, like I thought I had this really clever idea that I was going to record because all those samples of play in the books were pretty sure were fictionalized, like were written by the author from scratch. And so I had this clever, what I thought was a clever idea is I'm going to actually record a game session, take out a snippet and write that up in a rule set as a real sample of play. And then I was like, you don't, it's live casting is just is an avalanche larger than that gets you.
And Wizards has really embraced it now. And I can tell you this from having recently attended D&D Live, which is all about that. That's all about live streaming and embracing that, that culture. I think they're definitely embracing it, just not only in terms of like hosting that kind of event, but the one thing that happens during that event that's not just live play and whatnot is they do product announcement. And if you look at the products they're announcing, they're releasing a series of kids' books that introduce concepts of D&D without actually introducing the whole game. So, like, you learn what, a gelatinous cube is, but you don't really, like, you don't know how many hit dice it has, right? It's just sort of introducing you to the fiction of the game for targeting at really young kids who are just too young to even possibly play the game, but, like, getting them acquainted with the concepts.
So this is the thing that you told me right before we hit play on this chat that I was attempting to shake off my surprise and shock and awe. So interestingly, so you and I both got started with what are technically branded basic D&D products.
Let me add that one. So they're also releasing a new starter set that specifically has content in it that's built around one DM and one player and is targeted at a younger audience. And I think both of those things are clearly targeting the audience of you're an adult, you used to play D&D, now you have young kids, you want to teach them, here you go.
And to me, that's a new thing, right? To me, that's a new phenomenon is when I was a kid, there was a big clash. I mean, there was a big culture war, actually, over kids are into D&D, is that threatening? Do we need to stop them? I had one friend that their parent didn't let them play it because it was the wrong age. Yep. I had another friend that their parents actually prohibited it due to, I think, religious concerns.
Now we're getting into the satanic panic, right?
Right, exactly.
I also had a friend who was forbidden to play because of the religious impact.
And there were some D&D clubs in some schools. It wasn't unheard of. And like I say, I saw a D&D summer camp in the early 80s. But it was a couple of years ago that my mother, who works as a school nurse, said, you know, Dan, there's like D&D clubs everywhere. Like every school has to have a D&D club. And they're crying out for people who can run D&D sessions because the demand's too much. So now I see a lot of people, like I'm a parent, my kid is 5, 6, 7, they see us playing, they're intrigued, how can I get my kid involved? And that, to me, that's a very different dynamic. It's great.
The game is way more mainstream now, right? And the religious thing is just not even a thing anymore, to the point of, like, I think it's hilarious that we have this memory of the 80s like, oh my gosh, there were demons in the Monster Manual, and that's too much. Meanwhile, at D&D Live, alongside their kids' books line, they're also releasing their new content, which is Descent into Hell, specifically adventures about descending into hell.
Yeah.
So,
well, I will gently point out that Pat Robertson is still alive and still has his TV show. And if you know what, from what if anyone says, like, you know, I've done gaming, like, and they're talking poker, he will actually still go on an anti D&D rant. If you just say game, that's funny.
That's funny. I remember, oh my gosh, this is crazy memories here. Now, I remember, when I was in college, I was the president of our gaming club. And once a year at the beginning of the year, we would have some event where all the clubs of the school would set up little booths and try to attract the new freshmen to come join your club. And ours was just called The Gaming Club. And the two most common mistakes that people came approaching our booth was, one, is it gambling? And two, is it hunting? That's usually what they thought it was. Hunting. Yeah, big game hunting, hunt gaming. Game, I don't know.
Well, okay. So I got two anecdotes here. I have people, like in the statistics classes that I teach, that have, come from particular cultures and have a big problem because they've been prohibited from ever using dice or cards, and they have no notion of probability whatsoever. Yep. It's amazing the blankness that they have on things may or may not happen, and we can't tell which. Hmm. B, I got hassled by a cop for hunting with my D&D gear once.
Hunting with your
I came out of a friend's house late at night. I got in my, so this is in rural Maine.
Yep.
I got into my pickup truck to go home. I put my books and my pencils, turn on the lights, and a cop turned into the driveway, flashed his lights, and came over and interrogated me about whether I was spotting deer, which is blinding them with your lights so you can kill them.
Gotcha.
And I like turned him on the seat, and I'm like, what am I going to do, jab him with a pencil?
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the internet's changed everything. Like, that's, like, it's,
yeah.
Everything is, people just know so much more about the hobby. It's just so much more accepted in our society as a thing people do. And maybe video games is a little bit to blame there. That sort of, like, video games were also, like, a weird thing in the 80s that, like, oh, you know, hanging out in the arcade and never seeing the sun.
Yeah.
And what's wrong with you kids, you know?
Yeah.
Turn it into a video.
I think you're right. So I will say, you know, we got started with these, you know, basic branded sets. I think you made a good point that starting purely from original white box would be a heavy lift.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, in comes, you know, John Eric Holmes, who, you know, who considered his work as just editing D&D. So one thing I noticed looking through Holmes, actually, is it's so much like original D&D. The text is so often just copy-pasted.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why my instinct of responding well to original D&D comes from, actually. But I think we agree that, like, having, you know, basic starter sets made a big difference.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's a good idea.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I remember, and I feel like TSR and later Wizards tried this many times over, right? I remember, I became a ridiculous collector of their kind of terrible attempts at this. I have, like, the VHS game version of D&D. Uh-huh. I have the first quest, which came with audio tracks.
Heard of that. Yep, heard of that.
Yep, so I have the, you know, the VHS one?
No, this that's, one? I'm like, what the...
It's what classic. I'm trying to remember what the heck it was called. Anyway, yeah, it came with a VHS tape. It was awful. It was truly, like, really, like, bad 80s era effects. There's a half scorpion, half man, like a sort of centaur / scorpion. Scorpion man, or I don't know what that
was called.
Man scorpion. Man scorpion. There you go. Yep. Famously, there's one of those in it. I'll have to look it up. It's hilarious. I still have the tape. So I don't have a VCR anymore.
Was it like we're gonna teach you about D&D, or we're gonna show you a session, or you're playing? We're gonna show you a little snippet or something.
It's similar to First Quest, which is to say that what First Quest did was it gave you a CD. And it was like trying to handhold you into becoming a DM. It's like, oh, you're going to be the DM. Okay, tell the players this. Then play track X.
Okay.
And then in the track was more fictionalized from the perspective of the characters, what's going on.
Gotcha. Right?
But it's sort of, I think, taking the burden off the DM for having to, like, describe the world in words.
Interesting.
Right, and give them that. I think a better version actually was the giant black board game-sized box set of basic D&D. I had that one as well. That one, I think, did a really good job in that it presented it kind of like it was a board game. There was a big board, even. The adventure came with, like, a battle mat, and it came with, like, cardboard cutouts that you folded up into pieces, so you could present it to your pals like, yeah, it's just like a complicated board game. Don't worry about it.
Right.
And then it chopped up the book into sections, and it was like, okay, in your first play session, you're going to do section one, and it's just going to introduce these couple of rules. And then the second time you play, you're going to do section two, and it introduces these concepts.
Yeah.
And it was definitely very much geared towards teaching you.
Did you play that? Did you actually play that set?
So the problem with any of those things is that by the time I became obsessed with collecting this stuff, I knew D&D very well. And so did all the people I was going to play with. So it was really unnecessary.
Right. Agreed. Agreed. Like, I feel like that's an enormous amount of work to, like, slice out little bite-sized chunks of D&D rules and make a session out of it.
Really fascinating. Really fascinating. Like, it starts with a prison escape, and it glosses over who, like, it's just giving you sort of, like, hey, just roleplay. Just roleplay, like, you know, try to figure out how to escape from the cell, and it gives you, like, 8 ways that possibly the players can escape the cell. No races, no classes, no stats. Right? Just...
Somewhere, like I was reading the other day, so somewhere somebody has an indie game called something where you start playing as blank slates, and so I believe that the game starts with you've dug yourself out of a shallow grave in a desert and you have nothing. Nice. And you don't remember anything.
Yep.
So part of the gameplay is remember your name, right, and plus everything else. Which I'm kind of fond of, because then that actually totally brick walls anybody coming up with big backstories.
The black box set was a little more ham-fisted, where like you walk into a room that's an archery range. Let's learn range combat. okay, all right, I guess. The next room's a library. Let's learn spellcasting.
But a lot of video games work like that, right? A lot of video games, I think, have a tutorial whereby, like, on this level, you'll learn run and jump at the same time. Yep. Is what this level's built about, right?
Yep.
It's funny how much of a struggle that is, and then it seems like probably live streaming really is the killer app.
It is. Now, I think there's a flip side to that, which is the Matt Mercer effect. Have you read anything about the Matt Mercer effect?
No, tell me about that.
So Matt Mercer is the DM in Critical Role, sort of the most popular, most recognized D&D live stream out there. And he has a certain style of play, right? He's playing 5th edition. He is very highly descriptive about what's going on. He does a lot of vocal sound effects. He does a lot of voices, because they're all voice actors, right?
I was impressed by his voices.
He does a lot of voices. And he does stuff, actually some stuff that I think is pretty darn clever, where like someone misses and he narrates why it was a miss. Oh, you swing your sword and they duck low and they happen to be standing in front of a post and your sword bites into the post and now it's stuck. Right? He adds a little bit to the scene every time. Just by interpreting hits and misses in interesting ways. The Matt Mercer effect is, hey, I watched Critical Role, I love it, and in comparison, my DM sucks.
Okay.
And so they're quote-unquote suffering from the Matt Mercer effect of like... And Matt has, bless him, has come out and been like, you don't have to run the game the same way I do. Like, please don't do that, right? Like, run your game your way. Not everyone's game is the same.
Well,
which I think
that's fascinating. Thank you for telling me about that. That's fascinating. I will say that, like, in the run up to our July 4th 24-hour mega stream, I was grappling myself with whether I should dig into Critical Role and listen to a whole crap load of it to understand how live streaming works, or come unbiased with like how we normally run our games.
You know,
and I listened to like 20 minutes.
I think a lot of our fans would be disappointed if our live stream sounded too much like Critical Role, right? Yeah. I know certainly readers of my blog have claimed like it's not really role playing; it's a TV show about role playing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that I totally agree with that, but certainly they play a certain style, which is not necessarily our style. And I think the value of us doing a live stream was showing our style, and I would love to see more. You know, more streams that show different styles, because I think there's a lot out there.
I 100% totally agree about that. And frankly, I think I walked away from that game thinking, like, if we did a lot more of that, it might possibly alter our style a little bit for the streaming.
Yeah.
And not that that's a terrible thing, not that I think it would radically change it, but I was actually really happy to, like, actually document, like, what we normally do not attempting to follow Matt Mercer.
I mean, you know, on the other hand, I've listened to a fair amount of Critical Role at this point, and there are some moments where I kind of roll my eyes and go, oh, is he really doing that? Like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
I would never do that in my game.
Okay. Yeah. I would trust that. I trust your instinct there.
I don't know that any's necessarily right or wrong. There may be better or worse, depending on your tastes or whatnot. There might maybe some cases where the large majority of people would also agree that something's better or worse. But, I don't know. I think there's a lot out there, and there are a lot of great streams. The problem, the downside is that it's a long format of, you know, I remember Lord of the Rings coming out and people being like, this movie's too long, right? This movie's just too darn long. A live play, you got to listen to like at least 4, maybe 8 hours before you're like in the groove and understanding the show.
Yeah.
That's a big commitment.
You know, even with our thing, I was really surprised by how many people that we knew and how many people we didn't know were watching our live stream for extensive periods. Is my own partner, I expected to like tile in for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And she had a friend over. Like, she texts me and she's like, she's got a friend over. And now they're both watching it that I never would have expected. And I think a number of our friends like started doing something else. So like my partner Isabel started cleaning the house with it running the whole time.
That's... I mean, I listen to Critical Role on my commute, and I think that is pretty standard of that format.
Yeah.
Is it's a thing that you sort of listen to while doing something else, right? Or watch while, like, you don't sit there raptly staring at the screen watching a live play. You know, you've got to open in a window over to the side while you do something else, while you do your bills or whatever.
It's a. Once that thought gets into my head, it's obvious. It's it's not like sitting down and watching a TV show, movie, event. That makes a lot of sense.
I do think. Let me try and bring us back to topic. So in terms of like how do you learn how to play D&D, I think these days there's a you look at like the major sort of cultural things that make people aware of D&D. You watch Stranger Things. You know that there's this interesting weirdo game called Dungeons and Dragons. That's okay. Yeah. Maybe you do an internet search that lands you on a live play show. You watch some YouTube and you go, oh, that looks like fun. They look like they're having fun. I want to do that. Yeah. Then you go out, I guess, and you like go to Amazon and you buy one of these starter sets that's going to hand walk you through how to run a game.
I wish that we had had that. I really wish that we had recorded sessions of earlier games now. That would have been a true marvel.
Seems a lot better than finding a weird box in your mom's closet and being like, what's this?
Yeah.
I hope we don't get in trouble. Open it up. It's like, maps? What are these maps?
So my last bullet point, right? So as someone who only had the text and was always DM and is kind of literalist and, you know, might arguably be on the spectrum somewhere. So once in a while, Gygax said many things, right? He said a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah, he did.
He sure did. And the people around and people immediately around him and Arneson and Cask and people that played with him are kind of in the same boat. So one of the quotes that some people are really fond of throwing out from Gary is at some point, I guess he said, the one secret we cannot let people know is that they don't need any rules whatsoever. And so in some circles, people really, really adore that quote. Does that have how much, like on a 1 to 10 basis, how much traction does that have for you? Could the rules have just been not existent and said, just maybe like with your brother, go ahead and, you know, play pretend and now it's got dragons in it. Would that have been a thing?
Yeah.
Does
the statement track for me on a scale of 1 to 10? I'd give it a good solid 6 or 7. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I mean, that's... I feel like a lot of people who love that quote because they like editions of D&D that really emphasize this is a toolkit, this is guidelines, change it, do whatever you want, make the game yours. And then, you know, the extension of that is, oh, I don't need any printed material at all. I can just make stuff up, right? And I love that. And I definitely love that mentality. But the reason it's not a 10 for me is that, like... Well, then how do people find out about it? If it's not written down, how are other people going to find it?
Yeah. See, that's my thing. So it's interesting. I'm surprised you rank that as highly. So to answer my own question that I just made up on the fly, like I'm pretty down on that. And I would give that like 2.
Okay.
I would give that like a 2%, a 20% credibility rating. And what you just said about how, you know, I would never have learned about this hobby if it wasn't for a written book with text. I would not be part of this, and I would be standing on the outside saying, what the hell are you people doing?
Right. I mean, likewise, I was going to say likewise for me, except that for me, like, I was introduced to it by my brother, but he wouldn't have found out about it if it hadn't been written down in a book somewhere, right?
Right.
Like, so, I mean, that's the some people, a much smaller subset of people would have enjoyed the game perfectly well in a purely,
oral tradition,
right? Yeah. Sure, I guess. But if you don't write it down and you don't try to disseminate it, then the circle's always going to be tiny. And never is going to get to be this cultural phenomenon that it is now.
Right, right. I had a friend in music who had a thesis that was like, some people criticize Walmart for carrying music CDs or needing warning labels or stuff like that. But for many people in rural parts of the country, again, pre-internet, you wouldn't have found out about any of this music or even gotten started with if it wasn't in a mass market store in a recording. And so this echoes very deeply for me of some of us were in places where we needed books or we never ever would have found out about it. And that's what the game looks like to me, at least, is like it's a book first.
I feel like that quote, though, there's the underlying sentiment of that quote, though, is that eventually when it really is too much of a business, you are just continuing to add to make stuff up just to sell product, right? And I feel like we see that. We saw that in third edition. We saw that with the second edition splat books, right? We see that when it becomes too productized and you start releasing stuff just so that there's more product without it actually adding anything to the game, right? It really, if anything, worsens the game.
That's clearly a fact, right? So what you just said is totally a true statement. On the other hand, I see, like, we were at one game at Total Con where the DM was clearly not paying any attention to anybody's AC or attack chances. He was just rolling a D20, never asked us what our armor was, and just kind of by instinct declaring hits to be high and misses to be low. And so the counter argument for me is that, at least for somebody of my personality, like I need some kind of systematic mechanics in there, right? I want specific numbers and probabilities for hits and saving throws and ranges of your spells and stuff like that. And so for me, the magic is really the mechanical probabilities combined with a fantasy. If you just gave me a fantasy story, I'd be like, well, there's a whole lot of that. I don't get that. And on the other hand, if you just gave me programming code, I'd be like, well, that doesn't really tickle my fantasy part. But for me, like, the magic is the combination of this, you know, unpredictable fantasy stuff combined with mechanical probabilities. And I wouldn't, if both of those weren't there, I wouldn't find this a super interesting hobby.
I think that's totally fair.
I need a book with some kind of mechanical rules, at least for just like, do you hit or not?
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I guess, what is the quote that the secret is, that they don't need anything from us? What is it? We don't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the secret we can't let people know is they don't need any rules.
They don't need any rules. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, taken from that vantage point, I guess I would disagree with it a lot. That you can play a game where there are zero rules. That seems weird. I guess where I like it is, not that you can play a game with zero rules, but that you don't need TSR to give you the rules. You can make the rules up. But there should still be rules.
I'll agree with that 100%. Yeah. And also some kind of rules that the players at least have the opportunity to know about.
Right. Sure.
Right. To be able to, like, strategize around. Like, I actually saw someone quoting Dave Arneson the other day of Arneson saying to the player, don't ask me what you need to hit. Just roll a die and I'll tell you. And I'm like, well, that's a thing that we don't run our games like Arneson, is we like setting stakes so that players know on their own whether they've succeeded or missed. yeah, many
but
times.
But I don't always tell the player what the armor class is.
Agreed. Neither do I. But we're not. We sometimes we do. Yep. I mean, sometimes we tell them what's going to be a success or not.
Yep, that's true. Yeah, it's funny. I wonder if maybe I am adding more to that quote than is really there. With just taking on face value of the words alone, I think I'm with you and I disagree with it. But
yeah.
I think that in my head, contextually, I'm always hearing that as an insider statement that was made to, like, within the business, right? Like, he was saying that to... Like, he isn't just saying, like, obviously it's a secret. Like, he's not just going to go and start announcing that at conventions, right? He's saying that to another person, presumably who's also at TSR, yeah, to tell them, like, hey, we got to sell books. Don't let them know this or we won't sell any more books.
Okay. That's a really good interpretation of that. That's actually good for me to hear that. The quote tends to get trotted out anytime there's a rules conversation and someone just wants to shut it down.
No, that's like, unfortunate.
Don't even talk about rules because it doesn't matter.
Yeah. That I disagree strongly with. I like the quote from the angle of it promoting the house ruling.
Yeah.
That's the case I think I've usually heard it quoted. It's okay for you to not do exactly what's stated in the text. You can make the game your own.
That makes sense to me. That's not how I'd read that. You know, so again, another fact.
Context is everything. Yeah.
I'm glad we could deconstruct those 8 words.
Excellent. All right.
Awesome.
Let's wrap up how to learn D&D. Certainly, I agree. We seem to be in a minority, at least in the circles we travel, of like having learned it from a book rather than learned it from another person. And I think that that's a minority that's going to continue to shrink, because I think modern technology and the internet and everything's just causing that to become less and less likely.
That's what it's for. Take away the friction of communicating with other people around the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You have any other final thoughts on learning to play?
I mean, the one thing that you just highlighted for me an hour ago, I was not thinking about how much this has been changed by live casting. So the fact that our experiences had some amount of friction to, you know, getting into the hobby has now put in that context, live casting is really the silver bullet for that. It's wonderful that we have that, and I wish that we'd had it earlier.
Cool. Yeah, I agree. So if you viewers have any further thoughts about interesting ways you learned to play D&D or your background into unusual vectors into it or ways that you've tried to teach folks D&D or thoughts on how people are exposed to D&D has changed over the years, please drop us a line down in the comments section. We'd love to hear from you. You never know when a stray comment is going to promote a whole topic for a show, so we love to see that stuff. Please get in touch.
You know, I would love to hear if somebody actually learned from White Box. So if someone out there actually learned just from picking up White Box and nothing else, they would trump our experiences.
I kind of think that's super rare. Like if you if White Box was all that existed and you learned from the text and you didn't know anyone who played that, I would love to talk to that person too. I don't think they exist. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say no such person.
I don't know. I'm curious, and I bet that would be a very unique game that they were playing. Yeah. I bet they'd have to patch over a lot of stuff, and I bet that's a totally unique game that they're playing as a result. Mm. Yeah,
they might call it Tunnels and Trolls.
On that note, you can follow Paul and me on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch now by the handle Wandering DMs. We're Wandering DMs on all of those things. We are now live every Sunday at 1 p.m. So please come back next week and join us for another thought-provoking discussion, and we'll talk to you next time.
See you then.